Soul Silver Hard Mode. Apocalypse Johto. Rewritten. A Nuzlocke by Saber in Blue. Read by the author. Based on Pokemon by Game Freak. Prologue. Faithful Servant.
They say everything happens for a reason. What the fuck do they know? Like, what reason? Oh, see, right, because they don't know that part. Whoever they are, you know, assholes who say stupid shit that makes no fucking sense. They don't know what the reason was. I don't know either. All I know is I was 15 years old when it happened. 15 years old on July 2nd, 999 LC, the day that changed. And here's the thing. For me, that was going to be, the day. My day. That was the day that my very own Pokemon story was supposed to begin.
From the Journal of Candace Ogawa. July 2nd, 999 LC, New Barktown, Johto. Professor David Elm does not think about what just happened. He does not remember his wife calling his son in from the yard. He does not remember the panic in her voice. He does not hear, over and over, the sound that his son's body made against the ground when he did not run fast enough. He does not see his wife, curled around their baby boy in a last, desperate, pointless act. He does not look at their eyes. Instead, he looks at the Spearow, their beaks wet with blood as they flap away without eating their kills. Instead, he sees the flock, the swarm in the sky, feathers and talons and flashing eyes searching for more human prey. Instead, he hears the shriek from next door as Candace, his best friend's daughter, runs out of her house.
Professor, I can't find Mom!
Instead, he remembers that today was supposed to be the day that she and Bramble set off together.
I just saw her! I literally just saw her! She was gonna come see me off with you and Maddie and—
Instead, he remembers that not everyone he loves is lost to him.
Oh my fucking god, is that Maddie? Ethan?
And Professor David Elm does not think about what just happened. The first step is the hardest, and then he is running toward her, diving forward to knock her to the ground. An 8-foot wingspan cuts the air above them, but the Fearow swoops away with nothing but Candace's hat. Maddie made that hat for her. Professor David Elm does not think about what just happened. They're fine, which allows him to lie.
Professor?
Which allows him to help Candace to her feet, grip her shoulders, and lie.
They're going to be fine!
She's still looking at them. He gives her a shake, snapping her eyes back to his.
Candace?
Yeah?
You need to get away from here.
Yeah. No, I have to find Mom.
That'll be my job, not yours.
Professor!
Not yours, Candace!
Me and Bramble can help!
Bramble is a Chikorita, Candace a grass type. Do you remember your types?
Of course I remember my fucking types, Professor!
Then you know that neither you nor Bramble is safe here.
It ain't about safe!
A frantic, feral caw interrupts them, and Elm pulls her out of the way of another group of attacking birds. He whirls with her in a brief but deadly dance, a glancing feather slicing through her sleeve, missing her arm. Good. She doesn't notice it, her eyes locked stubbornly to his. Why does it always have to be an argument? Well, she is 15.
It's about getting help!
He grabs her Pokegear off her belt and shows it to her.
GTS cellular service interrupted. As of 8:06 a.m. 02 July 999 LC.
No bars, Candace. No GTS. No GeoNet. I don't know if there was a power outage in Goldenrod or what happened, but it means no one knows what's happening in New Barktown right now. Go to Cherry Grove. Get help. Run!
She nods, but doesn't move. Her lips shudderingly purse into the first syllable of the word, but, or possibly, Mom.
I will find her, Candace. Run! Now!
She runs toward Route 29, away from the horde of Spearow and Fearow. He turns towards it, readies his Togetic, and looks for Chrissy, his best friend, his next-door neighbor, Candace's mother. He finds her. And then Professor David Elm has something else to not think about. Route 29, Candace. I barely see anything on the way to Cherry Grove. I need to get away. I need to go back. I'm gonna die. Mom's gonna die.
It all mixes together, cancels itself out, turns my brain off, and the miles pound past under my feet like nothing. Gravel crunching, dirt spraying. It helps that I'm wearing boots built for travel. Everything I'm wearing is built for travel because today was supposed to be the fucking day. It's tradition. Every year, new trainers set out with a brand new Pokemon and go challenge the local gym. They don't win, but the point is to try. We call it doing your journey. It's a landmark in any kid's life, like losing your first tooth or whatever. You're supposed to try. You're supposed to try alone, and you're supposed to get there on foot, which is why I'm dressed for a solid week and a half of camping and hiking. Violet City's a long way away. It's going to be so much fun. Me and Bramble were going to sleep out every night under the stars, roll into Violet City, and then get fucking massacred because Raymond Faulkner runs a flying type gym. It didn't matter. You're supposed to eat shit. The point is to eat shit with your favorite Pokemon. It's to help cement the lifelong bond every trainer should have with their starter or whatever. Not that me and Bramble need cementing. She's my ride or die. That's the thought I focus on. As I lean, panting, catching my breath against a tree on the edge of Cherry Grove, the bark rough on my hand, staring in shock at the nightmare that used to be a city. Cherry Grove City, Kandus. The first thing my eye lands on is a Graveler, using itself as a wrecking ball to batter down buildings one after the other. Screams and cries are almost drowned out by the clamor of rubble and quaking earth. Almost drowned out. Not quite. It's happening here, too. Does that mean it's happening everywhere? I gotta do something. What am I doing? Find survivors. Get help. Save Mom. The Poke Center. I'll go to the Poke Center. Mom works there. Maybe your boss could help. Maybe a nurse if she's... If... It's close. I have to fight through a bunch of Geodudes to get there, but that's okay. I got my ride or die. I've got Bramble. I've had her since she hatched, and she's a badass. I hit the release button on her belt. A flashing ribbon of light snakes around my torso twice and stabs the ground in front of me. Okay, Bramble, use Razor Leaf. Her Razor Leaf is awesome. One time it fainted 2 centrets at once. Don't matter how crazy these Geodudes are. They won't know what hit them. Come on, girl. She's just nervous. Wait, she ain't never been nervous. What are you doing? Is she just standing there? What the fuck are you doing? She's just standing there. She faces me, turning her back to the nearest Geodude as it rears back on its hands. Bramble, look out! It falls straight over her, straight from me. I dive to the side. Bramble, help! She's my ride or die. She's my ride or die. She's fucking Bramble. What is she doing? The Geodude makes a grab for my legs. I yelp and spin out of the way, the chaos of Cherry Grove City smearing in a panorama around me as I do. My head spins, my mind spins. Everyone I can see is dead or dying. There ain't nothing I could do here. There ain't nothing anyone could do here. And there ain't nobody here who can help my mom. I bet Bramble knows that. She knows the professor made the wrong call, knows we have to... A rock hits me in the side of the head. I see stars. I lurch. My hand scrapes across the bark of the tree as I catch myself. My other hand fumbles for the recall button on Bramble's ball, finds it, hits it, and I run. Straight the fuck back the way I came. God damn it, we just wasted so much time.
Route 29. Kandus.
3 or 4 miles here, 3 or 4 miles back. Fuck, fuck. Need to get home, need to get home, need to get home. The more I scream it at myself, the slower my feet seem to move, the less ground I seem to be covering. Every step feels like it takes hours. I get the impatience from my mom. I know I do. The professor tells me that all the time. She tells me that all the time. I need to calm down, breathe, and just make fucking progress. I get the cussing from my mom, too. I will get there when I get there. And Mom will still be okay when I do. She's gonna be fine. She's awesome. She really is, though. She's so fucking cool. You're supposed to hate your mom when you're 15, but most 15-year-olds don't have my mom. She's smart and funny, and she never gets tired, and she's honest with me. Tells me what she's thinking about when I ask, like, the actual answer. She don't make up some shit you're supposed to say to a kid. She says she's worried about bills, or sad about a patient at the center, or even that she's trying to figure out if she and some guy are compatible. She tells me everything. She never lies. I slip against some rocks and catch myself and keep going. Gotta keep going. She met Professor Elm back in college. I don't think they ever dated, but they were really good friends. She was the best man at his wedding to Maddie. Fuck. They're gonna be fine. They're gonna be fine. They're gonna be fine. The professor said. He never lies neither, right? Wait. Who the fuck is that?
A snarl in the path, a freshly fallen tree, only a few feet of a gap, and squeezing through it from the other side is some guy with red hair. My age, a little older maybe. I'd never seen him before. Whatever.
Get out of my way!
He grabs my fucking arm and hauls me back in front of him.
Get off of me!
He don't.
What are you doing? Don't go back there. Are you stupid? My mom's there! Let go!
Your mom's dead.
Fuck you!
If she's in New Bucktown, she's dead.
Fuck you!
I shove him off with both hands. He was only holding me with one. In his other hand, a Pokeball. I'm close enough that I can read the name.
What?
That's Riptide.
My lip twitches.
You stole Riptide.
Riptide the Totodile. Hashed with Bramble and Bonfire. I never liked him, buddy little fuck, but that ain't the point.
Give him back.
He smirks. No.
Give him back!
He's a foot taller than me, thin but wiry, and really strong. He probably let me throw him off before. He takes a step back from me, hands spread wide. The smirk becomes a laugh.
What are you gonna do?
Fuck him. I slap Bramble's release button with my whole hand. Light whooshes between my fingers.
He's got Riptide, Bramble. Get him!
Nothing.
God damn it!
The kid laughs harder.
Razor Leaf!
Nothing.
Tackle!
Nothing.
Fucking do something!
She sits down on the fucking ground is what she does. And the tears start. I can't stop him. The kid shakes his head and walks past me. I shove him and make a grab for Riptide's ball, twist my ankle, and miss. Of course I do. He's bigger and faster. And not laughing no more. A flash from his hand, a ribbon of light. Riptide goes straight for me. And I completely fucking lose it. I sidestep him, let him zoom past me and grab his tail. He never did watch his back. And twirl the rest of the way around, letting go at just the right time. His pebbly scales sliding across my palms. Riptide is like 80% mouth. 100% of that mouth slams full into the stupid asshole poke thief stupid asshole face. And there's a lot more blood than I was expecting.
Fuck! Fuck!
And suddenly I ain't crying no more. Funny how that works.
That's what I'm gonna fucking do.
You psycho goddamn bitch!
Oh, fuck you.
Riptide's ball lands on the dirt near him. I scoop it up. Riptide trots back over to me, licking his red smeared lips, hops in place at my feet. Oh. He wants another ride. Well, fancy fucking that. But the path is open now. I clip Riptide's ball to my belt, hit the return button on it, and I look back over at Bramble. She looks back over at me, straight into my eyes. And I see it. I didn't recognize it before because I'd never seen it before. Especially not from her.
You're scared.
My lips purse, then twist, then snarl.
So am I.
My chest rises and falls, breath hissing out of my nose and mouth. I fill my lungs all the way up, tensing, shaking. She was my ride or die. Then I let it out through gritted teeth, and all I manage is a whisper.
So the fuck am I?
I rip her ball off my belt, throw it in the dirt, and take off down the path back home.
New Bucktown. Elm. At this moment, Professor David Elm has one eye, wishes he had one leg, and hopes beyond hope that he has one person left in the world to love. The swarm of Spiro is gone, and in its wake is silence. It's a silence that gives him a lot of space to think, so he makes sure he has plenty to think about. He's extremely happy. Or at least fortunate, that he chose to put the lab on the ground floor and the living space on the second floor. It's unlikely he could manage stairs right now, even with the painkillers he has in his system. They're mostly for the eye anyway, or at least the eye socket. With nothing to distract him except his thoughts, he sets to work figuring out what there is to figure out. Communications are gone. That entire sector of infrastructure is gone like it never existed. Even the radio is silent, which means at the very least that Goldenrod has been hit. He should be getting a faint signal from Lavender's radio tower as well, some white noise, something, but no. No transmissions or signals or messages of any kind are coming from any human in Johto, Kanto, or anywhere else in the world for that matter. Signals from Pokemon, on the other hand, Elm has somewhere in the vicinity of 10,000 transponder tags implanted in Pokemon all over Johto. Many of those Pokemon have migrated to Kanto, Sevi, or even farther. And in any event, he has access to the transponder networks of Professors Oak, Birch, Rowan, Juniper, Sycamore, etc., in addition to his own. Or he did. The systems that monitor those tags are all down, at least on his end. But they weren't down an hour ago. Pulling up the data confirms it. It's Pokemon of all types, of all species, everywhere. Migratory patterns have gone mad. Movements are aggressive, vitals are elevated across the board. And this is exaggerated in
and around human population centers. Something has changed. Something fundamental. The numbers don't lie. For Professor David Elm, it is very difficult to look at all those numbers, add them up, average them, cross-reference them, output them as charts, graphs, spreadsheets, cutesy goddamned infographics, and not arrive with the same answer every time. That this is the end of the world. Addendum. For humans, it is important to stress that while the new migration patterns are different, they don't seem unsustainable. While it is true that this morning Elm has seen with his own eyes, and then with one eye, more unprovoked Pokemon attacks on humans than are represented in the last century of recorded history, well, what was always his first lesson to freshmen in Pokebiology 101 at Winden? Pokemon don't need humans. Professor David Elm closes his laptop with a nearly but not entirely careless slap, looks out the windows of his lab, of his home. To the east, he sees the ruins of Crystal Ogawa's home. To the south, he sees the silence of New Barktown. To the west, he sees Route 29, and wishes that all of that data had taken longer to collect, collate, and come to an extremely bleak conclusion regarding, because all that he can think about now is the fact that 1 hour ago, he very likely sent the last person in the world that he loves to her death. He would go look for her, but he can't put any weight on his right leg. He doesn't even remember how he got into this room. Movement on Route 29, a tiny running figure. He stands up and rushes out the door with barely a hobble and collapses when he's halfway to her. She slows to a jog, a walk, then stops short. As she looks over her shoulder at the pile of wood and plaster that used to be her house. Her eyes move, and he knows that they are resting on the bodies of Madeline Elm and Ethan Elm. In exactly the same place she saw them last, when he told her they were going to be fine. She seems to walk the last 10 meters to him in a kind of daze. She stands over him, looking down without tilting her head, eyes glinting like ice in the hot summer sun, lips frozen in a hard line, expression smooth and unreadable. She doesn't move. She doesn't have to ask the question. He doesn't have to answer it. He does, however, have to say something.
Candace. You lied to me.
And having cracked, she shatters, dissolves, melts to her knees, crashes into his chest, pounds her fists against him like a slow tide. Every blow sends a jolt down his spine to his leg as he holds her. After a moment, she stops hitting him, hands shakily clawing themselves around him in a desperate, crushing hug. Her sobs send shockwaves down his spine, reverberating in his leg. He holds her tighter. He smiles. He can't stop smiling. She's alive. Candace Ogawa is alive. His best friend's daughter, the last person in the world that he loves, is still alive. And that is all that Professor David Elm can think about. Many other Nuzlocke stories, comics, screenshot runs, and written logs can be found on NuzlockeForums.com. The music is The Zangoose by Saber in Blue, also known as Sam Gabriel. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.